November 9th, we're taping a Shir and Intro to the Bible on the Derech of Rashi, who, by his own description, says, I'm out to first and foremost give you the Pshat. Right? If you want Drash, there's plenty of material that is available to you to get the Drash. Gracious Rabbah, Midrash Tanchuma, all sorts of Midrashim that Rashi quotes from. The Midrash Halacha that we discussed last class, right? Well, good. So we've discussed remember the main reason that we said that scholars give for why they moved from Drash to Pshat had to do with Christian polemics, remember? You know what I'm talking about? I gave you a particular example that touched upon philology, grammar, and context. Those are the three pillars of Pshat. Right? Everything else falls into one of those three categories. Okay, Drash doesn't care if Moshe is talking to Paro about Yaakov and Esav. Right? It's a deeper meaning. That message may be for Moshe or Bnei Yisrael, but certainly not for Paro. Who's talking about Yaakov and Esav to Paro? Why would that make any sense? Remember the chart we did, Bnei B'chori Yisrael, right? Okay. So Drash has a different agenda. Drash's agenda is the homily. We did the five categories of Drash, right? Why using this word when another word should have been used better? Or how do you explain this inconsistency? Sometimes you can't give a pshat to explain something, right? Rashi usually says when that happens, Ein hamikra hazeh omer ela dorshuni. And I want to give an example right here from next week's parsha. When Rivka is pregnant, right? Mistama, when the Bible describes this, she knows she's pregnant. All right, she's been praying with her husband. They married 20 years without children. You all know what I'm talking about here, right? Okay, this parsha, they're getting married. Next parsha, it says that she was an akara, and he prays for her, and she conceives. It's the stuff of the rabbi in a shul on a Shabbos morning, maybe, to recognize that when Avraham prays for a child, he only talks about himself. Anochi holich arimi. Right? God, I am childless. But when Yitzchak prays for his infertility, he says, "V'nochach ishto ki akarahi." He prays not for himself. I have a confidence in that God's going to keep his promise to me that I will be a great nation. I'm praying for her. And that's why Yitzchak is the only one who deals with infertility of three avos by not by marrying someone else, but by saying, only with this one, God. And she's he doesn't marry a second wife like Yaakov or Abraham. You get it? So that's what the rabbi does. And I don't know if this may be pshat, right? And Rashi, beautifully, because Rashi is a maybe first and foremost, some of his commentaries say, his job is to try to give pshat, but to be a homilist, to get messages from the Bible. Right, to be a good person, to be a moral person. That's why Rashi in the Bereishis story writes like he's writing for 5-year-olds. About a tree that disobeys God, about a moon that talks to God, about how big the sun is and how big it is. Who said that's pshat? Right? Why are you putting that? That belongs in a book, The Little Midrash Says. Or nice, cute agadatas that children can hear before they go to sleep at night. On the parashah. Right? Or Shulis Torah that you can share with your Hasidim. What are you putting that in your parish? That's Pshat Rashi. That's the objection that some of his later detractors had, like his own grandson, Rashbam, that we'll see shortly. All right? Okay. I mean, I would like to say that many a rabbi's sermon on Shabbos morning can start with Rashi says on the parsha, but I'm dashing in the shul for 33 years. I don't think I've ever started the drasha with the Rashbam or Ibn Ezra. It's not their agenda. Sometimes afterwards I'll say a Rashi and I'll say, truth to be told, Rashbam views this pasuk differently because he sees the pshat this way, and I'll go back to Rashi. Alright, let's talk about this. Rivka is pregnant. She knows she's pregnant, but it's this pregnancy is giving her such a problem. Right? I quote you to Pesukim. It says, "Vayetar Yitzchak Hashem lenochach ishto ki akarahi, vayeyoser lo Hashem b'tahar Rivka ishto." and she conceived. Maybe she doesn't even realize she's pregnant. The very next pasuk says, "Vayisro tzitzu habanim bekirba." These three words, "Vatomer imkein lama ze anochi vatelech lidroshes Hashem." If this is what I prayed for, right? Lama ze anochi. Can you translate those three words for me? Why is it me? Not why is this happening to me? That would be lama ze li. Lama ze anochi means she's asking like to be or not to be. This pain is so significant. I mean, come on, Rivka, you're not the first person to give birth, and you prayed for this, right? You all with me? So look what Rashi writes. We're on page 59. This is Rashi, next week's parasha. Okay. Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Chaf Beis. He says, "Al Korcha Hamikra Hazeh Omer Dorsheni." It's source number 24 on page 59. "Al Korcha Hamikra Hazeh Omer Dorsheni." You must say that this pasuk must be darshan. Okay. Now this is how I'd like you to read Rashi. Whenever Rashi says something like this, right? He thought of a pshat. He knows there's a pshat to this. Right? His grandson Rashbam's Perush. Right? Rashbam lived to be 94, but was all of 16 when Rashi died. Right? I think that with any pshat that Rashbam gives that he disagrees with Rashi, and he does it all the time, I think he even conversed with Rashi about that pshat. Right? Rashbam writes all over his Perush about his conversations with his grandfather, his mother's father. Right? And Rashbam writes a simple pshat to this. What would you say? I'm going to give a shir to men who are single. My wife gave birth six times. We never had twins, but I have relatives who've had twins. What's the obvious way to explain this in pshat? Well, you can't do anything unless you know what the words mean. But Vayisro tzitzu habanim bekirba vatomer imkein lama ze anochi. So vatelech lidroshes Hashem. She went to inquire to God. Either that means to pray, like Rashi says, or vatelech lidroshes Hashem means she went. And I said it's Rabban. Rashi says she went for an oracle. Vatelech lidroshes Hashem means she went to Shem Ve'Ever. She went to a Navi. Right? Can you hear, why would you say that? Why doesn't Vatelech Lidroshes Hashem just mean she davened? To Doresh God can be the daven, right? Talk to me. Tell me that if you're just sitting there and say, okay, put information in my head, you're not going to get this.
You use davening in other places.
That's one way to do it. But Lidroshes Hashem appears many times in Tanakh. And why can't it just mean, God, talk to me, God? Why am I suffering so much? It's prayer. How does Rashi know about Telech Lidroshes Hashem means that she went to Shem Ve'Ever and to Ed? Yes?
Because the davening is more one-sided, like you're kind of just asking, you're telling Hashem something.
Use the words. Telech Lidroshes Hashem. What in those words means that she didn't just pray? Yes?
Why Vatelech?
Just say Vatidroshes Hashem. And that means that she prayed. She was Doresh. Right? Maybe this word can help us understand what Drash means. It means she went in to really inquire of God. Why is God? Come on. I knew when I was marrying this man that I was becoming part of history and part of something great, but that's for you. This Vatelech Hashem is very, very, it's important. It shows that she bought into what Yitzchak was doing, right, with his father, right, by creating this nation, right? So, and Hashem comes right to her and answers her right away, telling her that she's carrying not one, but two children. This might have been... Now, I would assume by Yisro Tetsu HaBanim B'Kirba that she knows she's pregnant. She feels she's 6 months pregnant already. Right? Okay. Or it may be, but by Yisro Tetsu HaBanim B'Kirba may be an amazing secret here. This I have experienced. It's that right after becoming pregnant, a woman suffers a lot. Here it's called morning sickness, right? 2 weeks, 4 weeks, right? Right? You ever hear the? I'm tape. There's a tape called The 2,000-Year-Old Man where Mel Brooks is explaining in 1961 on this early tape. He said, why do women get sick when they're pregnant? He goes, it's very simple. As soon as she realizes that there's a living thing growing inside her, she pukes. It's disgusting. Imagine that. There's something growing in me. Right? So I don't understand it. It's part of life. She gets sick right away. Right? And another amazing thing. This is an amazing scientific thing. Just know that a lot of, you know, animals give birth 2, 3, 6, 7. Why are humans mostly giving birth to 1? Want to know something? Google this and look it up. Humans also conceive 2 or 3, usually. But there's that they fight inside. They don't really, not really fighting, you know what to call it. But they're vying for nutrients, and one, the most powerful one, gets rid of the other one, or the other two. She doesn't even realize it. These things that are fighting, 100 of them can fit in a head of a pig. But they the stronger one, and that's the guarantee that one is going to make it through a pregnancy. Okay? That's what's going on here, right? So it's up on the Imbicure Bar, because everyone wants to know, how can children fight inside of the womb? Who's fighting? Come on, they're fighting inside the womb. Now, I ask you, if you know anyone who bore twins or one, come on, what is this talking about? Nothing? Rashbam writes, "Hayu misna'anim besoch me'eho kiderech ubrim." Rashbam loves this word, kiderech. Get it down now, kiderech. Or he uses this word often in his parish, derech eretz. How is he? He's using derech eretz, means the nature of the world. This is the way the world goes. Come on, if she didn't realize she was carried two, that will explain it. It's not just one moving inside you. Sometimes a woman can actually see a foot pushing out. You see, there's a devil inside her, and she can see them coming, pushing out, maybe stretching out and pushing out. When there are two, right, they're moving around. So Rashbam says, "Hayu misna'anin b'soch me'eho kiderech ubrim." Right, Rashbam explains the Yosef story. I'm a brother. I know what brothers compete. So I can explain the Yosef story in terms of the derech eretz of brothers. You got it? Derech eretz just means to use human experience to explain these holy words of the Torah. Okay? And derech eretz tells us, I know someone who once had twins, and she said it was murder. Right? Okay? You got it? Whenever Rashbam writes something like this, would you agree that it's a simpler pshat? I didn't tell you what Rashi says. I assume everybody here knows what Rashi says. Right? Rashi gives two perushim to this. But he says, "Al korchach hamikra hazeh omer doshumi." This you have to say. "Al korchach" means against your will, because most logical people want to get pshat first. But on this one, against your will, you have to say, "Darshumi." What's the shorush of this word?
Rots.
So
rots, like one.
Some say rots, to run, to move around, to, right? But there's two tzaddiks there. So maybe it's ratzatz. These are two different words. Okay? As ratzatz, it's a hapax legomena. Remember that word? What does it mean?
Only on here in one time.
It's never found again in the Bible. So what's Faistrotz of Sue when it comes to unborn children? I'm not sure what it means. Now, the Shorish Rotzatz does appear. It means to fight. Okay? Roots means to run. This is a very unusual text because unborn children, yeah, neither fight nor run. So what does this mean?
One.
Okay? So Rashi gives you, Rashi would never make up something like this again, a difference between Rashi and Chazal. Rashi is first faced with a problem. A difficult word, it's a hapax. What does it mean in the context of an unborn baby? So what does he have in front of him? By the time Rashi wrote down his perush, which some scholars say started at the age of 5. Rashi, at the age of 5, started preparing his perush, saying, like you saw this 4-year-old girl to a 3-year-old girl thinking symphonies in her head, right? Rashi, at the age of 5, was already putting down questions that bother a 5-year-old, because it says in Pirkei Avos, Hamisha Lemikra. Okay? And at 5, you should start learning Chumash. So I want to see, what does a 5-year-old care about? Right? So Rashi is not sure what this word means to begin with, right? And if you go with what I said before, that if Rashbam says that these babies were moving around in her kederech, kederech means you don't have to darshan. This is a common experience, right? So if you recall, at the end of last class, I wrote, to Rashi, the biblical text must be significant. We're not told something just in passing. Remember Occam's razor? This is too much information. Why do I need this information? Anybody hear what Sarah's pregnancy was like, guys? There's not even a medrash about that. And I assure you, Sarah's pregnancy at the age of 89 was more painful than Rivka's pregnancy in her 20s or 30s. Rivka's the only woman in Tanakh who told about her pregnancy. Okay? So, when the TMI, always use that. To Rashi, TMI is so important. It means that if this is just telling me information, that Eliezer gave her 10 gold coins and 2 bracelets and a earring weighing a beka, right? Well, then you have to tell me all that information. Just say he gave her expensive gifts and shine. And there's more where that came from if you come with me. But what do you have to give me all this information? So when Rashi sees that, he is going to not fabricate or make up. He's going to look at the available information that's there for him. Right? You got it? Brachos Rabba, Tanchuma, Agadotas in the Gemara, Targumim, Targum Yonasan, whatever's available to him, right? Although he didn't know it as Targum Yonasan, he probably knew it as Targum Yushalmi. And he will look at what's available, and on this particular case, he found 2 midrashim. Here they are. Shestam mahi ritzitza zu v'kosavim kein lamaze anochi. This is really the clue. He tells you right here. What is this ritzitza, hapax? I don't know what the word really means, especially in the context of giving birth. Especially in the context of giving birth. Who would say the word by Yisro Tzitzu regarding fighting for an unborn baby or running, right? So he says, it's not the question what this word means. It's a question, why am I told it in the first place? The pasuk could have done just well by saying, skip the whole thing and just say, she conceived, right? And she had twins, and the first one came out. Who needed the fact that she had a difficult pregnancy? Who cares? Just to tell me that it's Derech Eretz? Rashbam, this is why you weren't so popular. You were dry. You're telling your readers that this was a difficult pregnancy from something that could happen to 1,000 other women. Rivka's not the first person to bear twins, and not the last. So this has to be something so extraordinary, and I have to give it significance. Got it? Okay. This can be the every time Rashi and Rashbam disagree on a pshat or a drash. This is not always the reason for it. I'm going to give you 5. All right. Is anybody aware of 2 midrashim that can explain what this fight or running is about? Go ahead. Anybody over here remember? Probably learned in 3rd grade.
Yeah.
What are they fighting about? What's going on?
Was trying to
show.
Yeah.
See, remember this.
Which,
when they pick, now you don't remember it because you learned in Bereishis Rabbah. You remember it because it's a Gemara. And because it's Rashi. You probably learned it in the context of Rashi. It's a Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin, and it's a gracious rabbi. That when she passed a place of Avod Zarah, Esav would struggle to get out. When she passed the place of a Beis Medrash, Yaakov would struggle to get out. So, you see, this is not the drash. The Gemara Gaon says, she didn't know she was carrying twins. So she said, wait a second. How could this thing inside me struggle both for the spirituality of Avraham and my husband, and for Avod Zarah, but for my family? What kind of, in Cain, you get it? Lama zeh anochi. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzitzit. Anochi is the mitzvah of not believing in Avod Zarah. In Cain, lama zeh anochi. What do you mean? I thought Avod Zarah is something you don't want. How can a big child I am carrying turn to Avod Zarah? So Hashem said, shnei goyim b'vineich. There are two inside of you. True, one is going to turn to Avodah Zarah, but the other one is going to turn to your husband and your father. So she knew from according to this Midrash, she knew from even before these children were born, the Rav Ya'avot Sa'ir, that the younger one is the one that's following in the vision of your family. The other one is going to go back to with your, meaning your husband and your father, father-in-law, but the other one is going to go the other day. So I think this is what Rashi wants to establish for his readers. Because there's a great... This is such an in-depth point. It's the topic of a drasha, perhaps. Is that... Did Rivka do the right thing or the wrong thing by convincing Yaakov to get the upper hand on his brother with the bracha he took? Well, I don't know. She caused great enmity between the two. Right? She had to do it because she felt that what I experienced while I was pregnant and what God told me when I inquired of him, right? But she went, not she just inquired, she went to some place to inquire of an oracle, makes me automatically prefer the younger one. I love the older one too, he's my son. But no one but me. The question is, why didn't she share that information with her husband? I think she did. I think she told Yitzchak that day, I'm carrying twins. He said, how do you know? Well, I went to, God spoke to me. Alright? Why didn't you talk to me about this? I don't know. But I think she told him, because that's Derech Eretz. And I agree with Rashbam on the concept of Derech Eretz. I think she told him. She shared it with him. So why did he want to give everything to Esav at the end of the story? Right? The answer is because she told him the words Rav Ya'avod Sa'ir. Translate those two words for me, they're incongruent.
Rav
Ya'avod Sa'ir. Rav
what?
Ya'avod Sa'ir, which almost everyone takes to mean
stand greater, the youngest will stand greater.
Great, that's the way I want to make it. That's the Das Sakanim. Most translations read the older shall serve the younger. But you're right on target. I think that's how Rivka understood it. Yitzchak says no, because if that's what the top line means, it should have said habachor. It's incongruent. Varav means something great will make its way to the younger. And Yitzchak says, so great, good. How come Yitzchak Yaakov? But Yaakov will serve Esav, who will be part of the clan. I'm not happy that Ishmael, my brother, fell out of the clan, and that my father, at the end of his life, chose me to the exclusion of all his other sons. That does not make me happy. Would it make any of you happy if you got everything from your parents and everyone else was sent away? Even though it means now you're richer? Right? I'm not happy that God... I end up being the beneficiary of this, and I go along with it. But I don't want to do that with my family. I've got two sons and I want them both to follow me. Yaakov is going to be my spiritual inheritor. But he should serve Esav. He wants to make like a Yisachar Zvulun. You know what that means, right? Yisachar Zvulun kind of relationship. And I think Rav Ya'avod Sa'ir means greatness will work its way to the younger. He's going to get the land of Israel. He's going to get the Torah. And Esav will be part of that. Right? And Rivka said, no, this is not a good idea. Yaakov needs the Gashmius as well as the Ruchnius. And I know better. I was pregnant. I know. I remember what happened every time I walked past a place of Avodah Zarah. Now that's the way Rashi wants to read this. Rashbam says, I'm not in on any of this. It's a drash. Right? At least that's the way he presents it in his parish. Because if all this is just a baby moving around, two babies moving around, I'm going to read the words of Rashi to say how he would respond to his grandchild. Stam mani retzitza zu v'kosavim kein lama zehanochim. Why is it written in the Torah if all this is a difficult burden? Okay, you got it? One significance. Good. Rashi gives a second parish. Did anybody ever hear this second parish? No one gets that far. You read about the shul and the Valdizara, right? That he goes to church, Rashi gives a second parish. It's just a few words. Listen carefully. The Baruch there. Misrotzitzim ze im ze umirivim benachalas shnei olamot. They're fighting over two worlds. What? Why did you have to even bring this page? It's another medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. The Gemara doesn't bring this one. Bereishis Rabbah brings a second page. They're fighting over two worlds. Why? Let Yaakov have Olam Haba, and let Esav have Olam Hazeh. Esav lives for this world. He lives for the moment. He doesn't care about the future. Yaakov cares about the future. That's what religion is. Behaving today with a mind for tomorrow. That's what encapsulates the whole Tanakh. Don't live for the moment. Okay? Esav lives for the moment. His father-in-law Yishmael is mitzachek for the moment. His brother is Yitzchak. He laughs for later. You get it? Batizchak liyom acharon. You hear it? Oz yimolei schok binu. I'm putting aside something now for a later time. Right? Half of Mishle is convincing you that this is the musudik way to live. Right? Okay? Why did Rashi give two perushim? First of all, according to the first perush, are they fighting? No. I go your way, I go my way. You got it? They're running. He says. They're running to this one's running here, this one's running there. But then Rashi says, wait a second. That only captures one possibility of what the shorish of this word is. What if the other tzaddik is really part of the shorish? This happens with a lot of Hebrew words. Komemiyut. Komemiyut. Is the shorish kuf mem mem or is the shorish kuf vav mem? Those are two different words. One means to stand, one means to be established. Right? Hebrew letters double like that even when it's not part of the shorish. Alright? So don't you see what Rashi's doing? Yes?
How could he have thought this? I thought that he didn't know about Sharashim. Rashi didn't know about
Sharashim
yet. It wasn't.
So Rashi certainly knew about Sharashim. What Rashi disagreed with others is whether Sharashim largely have two letters or three letters. Rashi was of the school that not most, but many biblical words have two letter, even one letter Sharashim. Okay? Rashi has been discredited for hundreds of years. This, you know, you've probably studied this in the course of Duna Shibat Namrat and Menachem Bar Chelbo and Rebbeinu Tam and the Sfaradic commentaries and grammarians, Ibn Ezra, Radak, Sefer Shorashim, Ibn Piyuj, Ibn Janach. This is all a course unto itself. The Sfaradim ridiculed the Ashkenazic commentaries by indicating that your theory of two-letter shorashim is ridiculous. And they used Arabic as their source. Rashi has been considered wrong on this all this time, but listen to why one can consider he's right. Because on many Hebrew words, there is an ikar. Like in that those words, the ikar is this. Then you add something to it, changing the word a little bit. Whatever letter you put at the end of this, these two make the most common two letters in Hebrew that can accept out of 22 possibilities, right? It can accept 16 letters that make it a Hebrew word. Right? Nothing like that. Right? Anything you put after these two letters will mean practically the same thing. Something that separates from something else. Whatever you put after this, shomar, shomar, right? Porah, poratz, por. Oh, well, that's part of it. So Rashi may be correct about that, but no, but what I'm asking you here is, if Rashi gave two perushim, can you figure it out? Come on, it's laying right in front of you. This one runs to this place, this one runs to that place. And it says, Davar Acher, they're fighting over two worlds. Fine, let him fight, but no, they're fighting. So what is he doing?
Getting both options.
He's trying to get both options. Rashi wasn't sure what this Hapax Kamana is even. So Rashi says, it could be roots, it could be rutsats. I'm going to give you two midrashim that I find in Bereishis Rabbah, and there are other midrashim on this too. These two are enough. One says they're running, one says they're fighting. That's the Rashi's word. Right? Rashi's job is not to give you a credible interpretation, because it's incredible that babies in an unborn state can know that their mother is walking by a place of a bazaar or a place of spirituality. It's incredible. Right? Get it? So Rashbam is much more credible in this commentary. And remember, I said before, whenever Rashbam gives such a pshat, the assumption is that Rashi knew that, he spoke to Rashbam about it, and still nonetheless wrote in his perush this drash. The answer is because the text must be significant, and you're leaving it insignificant, right? God tells Moshe to enact the first plague, and he says, go out in the morning to Paro, he's going out to the water, go meet him there. And tell him that you demand that Bnei Israel leave Egypt. Right? What's the TMI there?
Paro's going out to the water. Yeah.
And he tells him what time of day to meet him there. Right?
Yeah.
God tells Moshe 10 times to go to Paro and tell him something. Right? He never tells him when to go. Right? You got it? Right, there is one other place where he tells him where to go, but still. Now, why it says to go down to the water is obvious to all of you, because
of blood.
The first plague affected the water, so of course you got to go to the water, right? But why are you telling him what time of day to go, right? And on this one, Ibn Ezra, who usually is objecting to Rashi's significance commentaries, Ibn Ezra says, kings like to live near water. It's very pleasant. It's true. All the Egyptian palaces were on the Nile. It's good. Practically everyone in Egypt at that time lived near the Nile. Couldn't live too far, too much further away. Right? Okay. Then Ibn Ezra says, even to this day, Egyptian rulers go out in the morning to measure the Nile at different times of the year. All right, I don't know what time of the year this is. There is a Mishnah in the Sefer Ediot that says the first plague was around Pesach time, because all 10 plagues took 1 year, right? And that's where the Nile is starting to. They go out and they say, okay, this is where the Nile was yesterday, this is where it is today. So in the context of measuring what the Nile is doing for us, right? That's where I want you to go and effect this plague, right? In that particular case, I think that that Ibn Ezra does a good job explaining both of these, but not so much. He explains why he's telling him to go to the water, but that didn't need explanation. That's where the plague is happening. What does Ibn Ezra not explain? Why he's told to go in the morning. The Torah needs to tell me, using three words, to tell me that this measurement took place in the morning. That's TMI. Who cares what time of day this takes place? Following? Hashem should just tell Moshe, go to the water and make your demand, or right on the spot turn the water to blood. Why am I told when in the day? Anyone know how Rashi answers that?
Yeah, that's because when Paro goes out to the water,
yeah,
that's the only time of day when he goes. When he goes to the bathroom.
That's when he takes care of some natural business. And Rashi wants to put that mockery in there. Right? We're going to get it there. Go. Elohei Mitzrayim Esesh Shvatim, says God. Right? Not just the Egyptians, to their gods. Right? To the Egyptian, the god of slaves, the god that slaves pray to, must be a weak god. Why?
Because they're slaves.
Because he's not strong enough to give them their freedom. Right? So, Paro, we're going to take you to school about God. Right? This is part of my decree. Maybe it's for Mechiras Yosef, like Abravanel says. Maybe it's because of Avraham going down to Egypt so readily in Parshas Lech Lecha, like Ramban says. Or like a Gemara Bar Mitzia seems to say, so that we would be sensitive to the plight of the stranger. Whatever it is, that's part of our history. Right? So that is that's what Moshe is about to teach Paro about his God. Right? But it's part of it's farcical. You'd rather urinate in your God than let anyone know that you're not a God? Right? Okay, Paro made himself a God of himself. Okay, so Paro, you're about to be taken to school. Now the fun part starts. Okay, so Rashi gives us that background. So Ibn Ezra, I think, was trying to do what Rashi is generally doing by explaining, why is Moshe told to go down to the water? But you know what, Ibn Ezra? I didn't need that. This plague is happening in water. Got it? All right, what I did need was, why is he told when to go to Paro? Okay, get it? All right, so that's Rashi. Ibn Ezra very often was as dry as Rashbam tends to be about this question of significance. But I will, as we're going to learn the difference between Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, you'll see that Ibn Ezra is maybe a little more sensitive. There is someone that goes beyond Rashi. It's Ramban. This is 1a, Rashi, 1b. This is, I would use the term that I believe Dr. Ellman here teaches here. Once used in an article he wrote some years back called The Omni-Significance of Ramban. So, okay, this is Rashi. This is significance on steroids. Ramban takes what appears to be simple biblical texts, and this is source number 27 on the page, that's, again, the same parasha, Parshas Toldos, where the fourth aliyah, Yitzchak digs out three wells, and it says that the Plishtim filled those wells with dirt because they didn't want Jews living amongst them. This is really the first real textbook case of anti-Semitism, because Yitzchak did very well living amongst the Plishtim. He had to move there because of the famine, right? He wanted to go to Egypt, but Hashem said, "No, I'll tear it Mitzrayim. Gur ba'aretz hazos." You have to stay in this land. You're too holy. I don't want you leaving this land. Right? So the Philistia is part of Israel. So he went to live amongst the Plishtim, and he did very well. Right? And the Plishtim say, "Lech me'imanu ki atzamta mimenu me'od." Get out of here! You're doing better than we are. We can't stand that. Right? Jew, by virtue of his lifestyle, does better than other people. Right? So the world can't stand that. How could Israel be doing so much better than everyone around it? It must be you're conspiring against us. It must be that you're poisoning the well. It must be that you're doing... Right? Okay? But that's exactly what the Plishtim were doing. They were destroying and ruining Yitzchak's wells. Right? So he digs three wells. The first one is called Asek, because they fought over it. They said it's the fight. The second one is called Sitna. No reason is given in the Torah. It just says called it Sitna because they fought more, from the Shoresh Satan. And the third one is called Rechovot, because that one, they made a pact that you'll let us have this water. And they called it Rechovot, which means now we can spread out. There's a city in Israel with this name today. Right? So Ramban writes, what is the point of this story? Yisaker ha-chatub yarich be'inyan ha-be'erot ve'in b'pshutei ha-sipur to'elet ve'lo kavod gedol Yitzchak. What's the point of this story? There seems to be no purpose to it and no great kavod for Yitzchak that he kept running away from the Philistines. It says that Huva Aviva Suov Sobishova, it says he dug the wells out like his father did. We're not told any stories about how Avram dug out wells. Why am I told stories about how Yitzchak digs out wells? It says, Aval Yesh Bedavar in Yan Nistar Betocho, Kibala Hodia Devar Atid. There's something that there's a great secret in these three wells about what Yitzchak did. And Ramban goes out to show how each well and the background of how it was dug and what the Philistines did are indicative of Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, and in the future, Bayis Shlishi. And you need to look at this and say, this is Rashi on steroids. How can you do this? This is just a simple story about digging wells. Right? And Ramban said, and he's so convincing. When you see how he tells us that this second well called Sitna refers to Bayis Sheni, when Bnei Yisrael started building Bayis Sheni in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, it describes at great length all of what the Persians did for us in helping us build the second base of Mikdash. Great length, chapter after chapter, right? But one Persian king forced them to stop. And he wrote a letter to all of the governors in Judah to stop them from building this second temple. And that letter is called a sitna. V'yichtov sitna. He wrote a sitna against the builders of Yerushalayim to get them to stop. Anyone know the name of this king? He was goaded on by a group called Tsarei Yehuda, the enemies of Judah. Right? And I have no doubt that the head of this group was Haman, who's called in Megillat Esther Tsorer HaYehudim. The king that forced them to stop in Ezra chapter 4 is Ahasuerus. He's mentioned outside of Megillas Esther. Right? Not a friend of ours, originally. But then he married one of us and the whole story changed. But be that as it may, this Ramban uses the linchpin is this Sidna, that it's by Shani, and then he shows whatever went into the third well is what we need to do to initiate by Shlishi. I'm not going to get into all the particulars here. But don't you see some phenomenal... He sees a whole aliyah that says, who needed any of this? The whole thing is TMI. The whole story is too much. It says Avram did it too. I'm not told a single word about how Avram dug out wells. Right? Does everybody in this class see how Ramban is Rashi to the next level? Right? On this particular issue. Okay? Now, you have an assignment. You're going to read Rashi, Ibn Ezra and Ramban, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban, on the first, every Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban, I'll give it to you, the first, I'll tell you the number, of Shmot, Perek, Bet, okay? Just the first... Three psukim would be enough. Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Ramban. Maybe you should write this down, perhaps. Okay. I will be at random calling upon you. It will have the force of one of your quizzes. If you're not here, you fail.
Can you say it again?
Make sure to tell it to your classmates who are not here. Okay. Shmot, just Aleph, Bet, and Gimel. Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Ramban. All three of these books are translated into English. Don't tell me I couldn't get it in my Mikros Gedolos. There are plenty of English translations in the library or online. Okay, all three are online also.
All three of
the... Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Ramban. By reading Ramban, by the way, he quotes Rashi, Ibn Ezra, but you probably want to see it in the original first. Okay, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Ramban, and you're asking all these questions. What are their problems with the biblical text? What are the three or four main issues that they find as that they're dealing with in this text of Shmos Aleph, Shmos Perek Bet, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. Okay. All right, everyone. Have a great day today. Have a great Shabbos. What?